We welcome everyone back, joined now by the outstanding Dave Revson, BTN. Dave, first of all, it's always great to hear you on the other end. Thanks so much.
Oh, my pleasure, Steve. Always good to be on with you.
All right. The alliance was announced yesterday, Pac-12, ACC, Big Ten. What did you get out of that press conference? What were your takeaways from it?
I think the biggest thing that I took from it, Steve, was kind of this notion that these three conferences are aligned with one another. I don't know that they totally know what form that ends up taking, although they would like to play one another more. I think for some obvious reasons, the biggest one would be it enhances schedules and I think is a way to kind of expand without expanding. So I think that was a big part of it. But realistically, it's going to be a while until they're able to kind of unwind the football schedules and get themselves to a point where they could do this on an annual basis. So I think once you get past the scheduling component of it, it felt to me like, to a certain extent, they were drawing a bit of a line in the sand and just kind of saying that they weren't going to let the balance of power get completely out of whack in college athletics. They weren't going to let one league, namely the SEC, take too much of the power. That they wanted to slow things down when it came to the college football playoff and make sure that the expansion that was proposed, somewhat under false pretense, I would say, certainly without everyone being armed with all the knowledge they're armed with now, maybe that would be the best way to put it, that they want to make sure that that's best for their leagues. And just a notion that they have kind of a model of college athletics in mind of what they want it to look like, and that they're all going to kind of work in alignment to see whether they can have that model at least partially remain in place. And just this sense that there's a power void in college athletics, that the NCAA, to a certain extent, has abdicated its power. And certainly when it comes to enforcement, I mean, you know, Will Wade is still coaching basketball, so that's probably all you need to know, right?
You and I are on the same page on so many things.
Right? Yeah, and so like, who's in charge here? And it's pretty clear that on that level, there isn't really anyone in charge. And so who's going to take that power and who's going to determine where it goes from here, maybe more accurately? And so they essentially wanted to say, hey, philosophically, we're together here. And whatever that looks like, whatever form that takes, we don't know. And we could have sat in a room for 2 years and tried to figure out what it does mean and come at you with a 20 bullet point plan. But the truth of the matter is, in those 2 years, things could have changed so dramatically that you would have had to tear the thing up. So let's just come out and say that we're together, we're aligned, we have similar ideals, and we're going to work together to figure out where this thing is going.
Because 2 years ago, we didn't think we'd be talking about all these issues. Just so you said, two years, it changes. Interesting that the four-person group that had been working on the college football playoff, and it's now expanded to a larger group, but the four-person group included Craig Thompson, Mountain West, great, included Bob Bowlsby, Big 12, Greg Sankey, SEC, and Jack Swarbrick from Notre Dame. It did not include anybody from the Big Ten, the ACC, or the Pac-12. Is that part of where they're coming from, do you think, when it comes to the 12-team playoff? That, you know, the committees are set up in such a way, but they didn't have a voice at the original table.
Absolutely. I'm thinking about Bob Bowlsby. I mean, he's sitting here nodding his head alongside Greg Sankey, presumably saying, yeah, this is a great plan. And all the while, he has no idea that Greg Sankey knows in the back of his mind that the two most important schools, and some might argue in terms of the, I don't want to in any way minimize like the importance of Texas Tech, Iowa State, whatever, because those schools are important. I think the shame of all of this is that those schools are going to be left out of this equation likely. And those are proud schools, those remaining schools in the Big 12. But in terms of the power structure of college athletics, the two schools that far and away mattered the most in the world of Bob Bowlsby. Little did he know, as he sat there next to Greg Sankey and nodded his head approvingly as they decided on this 12-team plan, that those two teams were going away. And Greg Sankey knew that, and he didn't. So yeah, like, let's, now that everyone knows the same information, let's get back in a room and let's figure out what's best for everyone. And what works for Greg Sankey may not work for everyone else. And it may not work for Bob Boldsby anymore. And so let's kind of see where this thing is now that we have a little bit more of a sense of what's actually happening here. So, yeah, I think the fact that those three leagues had no seat at the table and that one of the commissioners was in there armed with information that the rest of the group didn't have. Sure. I mean, yeah, let's slow the roll a little bit and go back and see what works for the rest of the group.
It's interesting, Ben, before I talked to you, I was teaching my class this morning, and one of the themes was being there. In other words, if you're going to be in sports media, be there. You just, and I cited you as an example because of the play-by-play work you do in basketball and because of the camp tour, being there. So in making your camp tour, this is week zero. Illinois plays Nebraska. What was your thought going to Champaign and to Lincoln when you had a chance to see those two teams face-to-face?
So I got to tell you, Illinois is much better than I thought they would be. First of all, it's Brett Bielema. And we know his track record, right? The guy won three straight Big Ten titles at Wisconsin. He knows what he's doing. He understands this league. And so he has the ability to kind of get a little bit of a head start, I think. Plus, he knows the state of Illinois. I mean, he's from Illinois. No one needs to point anyone towards Chicago, but no one needs to tell him, hey, you know, Springfield, Sacred Heart Griffin, that's usually a good program. Or, you know, here's who's good in Peoria. He knows that.
Right.
And that matters in this state. Hey, where can you get players from on the margins, particularly in central Illinois, where I think Illinois has a, you know, the brand name maybe carries a lot of weight. So Brett knows the landscape of the state. He understands the league. And then I think it really speaks volumes that he had 17 scholarship seniors from last year come back. Right. I mean, Steve, in this day and age where anyone can go anywhere. I mean, you don't need to be a senior anymore, right? You can leave and show up somewhere else and play right away. And so if you think about a group of players on a team that hasn't had a whole lot of success, you've got one last chance to play. Maybe you're a pretty good player. Some of their offensive linemen in particular, you know, Doug Kramer, Bedarian Lowe, these are guys who can play for just about anybody.
Right.
And they said, no, we're going to stick with this guy. I think that tells you a lot. It tells you that there's buy-in there and that the guys believe in kind of what he is preaching. So, I was fairly impressed by Illinois. We saw those two back-to-back, and I don't think there's a huge difference between Nebraska and Illinois. What I would say is, in terms of the track record, like, I still really like Adrian Martinez. He just needs to cut down on the mistakes. You know, he just coughs up the ball too much, but when he's on, he's pretty good. I mean, the guy completed more than 70% of his passes last year. I do think the quarterback position just matters disproportionately in college football. Now, Brandon Peters had a lot of issues last year in terms of, you know, COVID. And so I don't think we necessarily got kind of his best foot forward. And 2 years ago when we saw Brandon Peters, it's like, you know, he was pretty good. I mean, 21 touchdowns, 8 interceptions. He wasn't bad. So, but I do think the advantage slightly goes to Nebraska at the quarterback spot. But man, Illinois staff impressed me. And again, a lot of experience there. And it wouldn't surprise me in the least were Illinois to win that game.
When we get around to next week, more Big Ten games, including Minnesota taking on Ohio State and C.J. Stroud. I don't think it was any surprise he was named the starter by Ryan Day. When you had a chance to see him in person and talk to Ryan about him, what was the conversation like?
Well, the day we were there, C.J. Stroud threw maybe 3 passes. He was kind of tossing it around with the other quarterbacks at the beginning, and then that was it. So, and we talked to Ryan Day afterwards, and this was a bit of an open practice. So we were able to kind of roam around, but they let some of the other reporters in, and they kind of have this way of they all kind of gather in the end zone and watch from there. And there were many alarm bells being set off. And so then Ryan Day said afterward, no, that was pre-planned. We had decided essentially that C.J. Stroud was our starter. And we've had these guys throw a lot of passes here in camp. And this was just kind of a planned rest day for him. So I can't really speak much to C.J. Stroud other than he hands the ball off really well, Steve. Good at that.
I'm not surprised at that. I mean, I'm impressed that he can do that.
Uh, So, but the leadership, I mean, you can just kind of see in the way that he carries himself. But I do think sometimes we have this tendency when you're in camp to kind of have this affirmation of what others are telling you because, you know, we're dropping in for one day. And so you're kind of saying, okay, so what are they seeing in this guy? And then, you know, you have to say, okay, yeah, well, I kind of see that. But I do think there was this leadership. There was kind of this way that he was speaking to the other guys, whether it be on the sidelines, whether it be the other quarterbacks, kind of pointing and directing, and you just got a sense that he was in charge. And again, is that just affirmation, or is that really the case? I think we'll find out here in the not-too-distant future, because, look, they got two really challenging games. Like, Minnesota's good, man. I mean, they are physically good.
Yeah.
They look the part. So we'll see if they're better on defense than they were a year ago. But, I mean, like, that offensive line, whoo, yeah. They've got some really good skill. So I think they will be a very worthy challenge for Ohio State in the opener. And then, yeah, we all know how good Oregon has been in recent years. So we'll know how good C.J. Stroud is in relatively short order and how good Ohio State is. I will say this, Steve, they look different than the rest of the league. Right. Like, go past the quarterback. They just physically look different. They have for a long time, really for the entire time we've been doing this. Now, that doesn't mean that other teams can't beat them. I mean, we have seen other teams, as you are well aware, beat them. We've seen other teams win the Big Ten. But it has kind of been a one-off. I mean, there's still been this feeling that, wow, like, Ohio State's really good, and they're constructed different, they recruit different. Now, Penn State would be one. I mean, you know, all you have to do is look at the recruiting rankings for next year, and you look at how good they've been and how competitive they've been with Ohio State through the years.
Yep.
You know, Penn State's one of those that certainly is in that discussion of who can knock them off. But Ohio State does physically look different than the rest of the league.
And what was the impression you did get of Sean Clifford when you were there that Saturday?
I didn't think he had a great day. No. I don't know if you would agree.
Yeah, I agree with you. I agree with that.
You know, but again, I think this is kind of the risk that we run, and we parachute in for one day,
right,
and then we draw these broad sweeping conclusions, and I just don't necessarily think they're always accurate. On that particular day, Sean Clifford wasn't great, but I would also say, you know, we understand Sean Clifford's track record, and in the last four games last year, he was really good. He cut down on the interceptions. He made much better decisions. The team was better. It felt like something clicked with them for whatever reason after a shocking start, frankly. I mean, be in the top 10 and then to start 0-5, I mean, right, literally had never been done in the history of college football. But for them to turn it around in the way that they did, I thought it showed a ton of buy-in. And Sean Clifford was a lot better down the stretch, and Sean Clifford was really good 2 years ago. So I by no means would write him off or say that I think he's a liability for them. I would just say he didn't have a great first five games last year, and he didn't have a great day when we were there. But that doesn't mean I don't think he can be a good quarterback. I guess I worry a little bit about what's behind him. I didn't think Taquan Roberson had a great day when we were there either. And so, you know, I don't know. I mean, is that a concern? It's probably a bit of a concern, but... But you know what? Their running back room is great. I mean, it's really, really good. I think the offensive line has gotten better. They have one of the best receivers in the league in Jahan Dotson, and then Parker Washington had as good a freshman year as anyone in the Big Ten. I think they have to get a little bit better on defense than where they were a year ago, but certainly Brent Pry's track record tells us that they can. I think they made some good additions up front in a transfer portal that could help them right away. So I think there's just a lot to like about Penn State. But, you know, man, that's a tough game. I mean, their first three games, you know, Ball State's got a ton of experience coming back. Let's not look past them. And, of course, we know what it is to go to Madison. And Auburn, you know, I don't know. I mean, the last memory I have of them is them getting steamrolled by Northwestern in their bowl game. But, you know, it's still Auburn.
Yeah.
New coaching staff. You don't know exactly what to expect, although we'll be three games in at that point. But that's a tough first three games for Penn State. So we'll learn a lot. And similar to what we were saying about C.J. Stroud, we'll learn a lot about where Penn State is in those first three games.
Finally, what was the general impression we had of Wisconsin? Because COVID played such a big role in their up-and-down season last year.
It did. They were really impressive. So they're kind of in that next group, which I think Penn State is into, of kind of who can challenge Ohio State, who could beat them in a one-off, who could end up, if Ohio State doesn't win the Big Ten, who could win it. Wisconsin defensively, I just think it's going to be really, really good. They were really good last year. This was a team that led the Big Ten in total defense and was in the top handful in the country. They, for the fifth time in Paul Chryst's 6 years, were in the top 10 in the nation in scoring defense. And they figure to be really good again. I think we were a little worried about that group up front, but they were impressive when we were there. It feels like they've got some answers that, Matt Henningsen is back. He was injured last year, missed most of last season. They had a kid named Keanu Benton who was really promising up front in that post tackle spot. He just dominated some drills. So to me, I think they've answered the questions up front on defense. And then offensively, look, they weren't great last year, but you mentioned it. I mean, COVID really did a number on them. Graham Mertz looked very solid. They get back two guys who were hurt last year at receiver, and Danny Davis and Kendrick Pryor, who are very good. The one thing I'd say is running back didn't really jump out. Just doesn't seem to be an obvious answer there. Jalen Berger's fine. I think he's a perfectly good back. But, he's not necessarily, Jonathan Taylor, right? Yeah, I mean, he's just not. And all these great backs that they've had through the years. I mean, it just seems like you look back there and there's always at least one guy, and sometimes there's two or three. I'm just not sure there is. They got a transfer from Clemson, Ches Malusi, who had a decent day when we were there. A couple freshmen who looked okay. But I just don't think there's anyone who you're going to say, how do we deal with that guy? And so that might be the one issue, Wisconsin. But I was impressed, Steve. I think they're really good. That's going to be a great game. I mean, how cool is it to have these games right off the top? I mean, to have Penn State going to Wisconsin, to have Iowa and Indiana playing one another. I think Minnesota-Ohio State's going to be a really good game. Nebraska-Illinois, Michigan State-Northwestern. There's just interesting storylines. So I know the coaches don't always love it, but for the fans, for the broadcasters, they'd maybe like to open with some directional FCS team to kind of figure out where they are. But for fans, for broadcasters, for all of us, man, it's fun. And I think the players embrace it too, this notion of, hey, we're playing someone really good off the top.
Absolutely. Dave, always great. Thanks so much. Appreciate you very much.
All right, my friend. Great to talk to you, Steve.